the New Zealand Business Podcast, brought to you by Guerrilla Technology, your strategic and proactive IT partner.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Business Podcast. I'm Paul Spain. On this episode, during COVID-19 lockdown, I speak with Chief Executive of Spark New Zealand, Jolie Hodson.
Welcome along, Jolie. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. Really just settling into the new normal at home with the remote working and teenagers who are a combination of digital learning and I suspect a bit of streaming of games and all sorts of other things.
Yeah, it's certainly a little bit different from how life was just days ago, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely
now,
is.
I'm keen to hear a little bit just as we get started around Spark. I think every New Zealander knows varying bits and pieces about Spark, but may not sort of realise the scale of the business, how many people that you oversee. Can you share a little bit about that to start with?
Yeah, well, Spark's obviously a digital services company. We have a combination of both mobile services, but also IT and cloud. And over the last 7 years, we've been on quite a big transformation. Effectively, we have roughly 5,500 people in our business, which work across the country. Whether that's serving our customers in our retail stores or contact centres, or whether that's working on our networks or creating new products throughout the business. So we've got a whole range of people, and obviously, as a lifeline service or lifeline utility service for New Zealand, we needed to make sure we were well prepared for any changes in alert levels under COVID-19, so that we were set up to then be able to support our customers and a lot of New Zealand who have basically moved remote to be able to work, learn and connect. So a big focus for us over the last few months has been all around that planning.
Yeah. So, and what's your background? How did you get to this point to lead what is, you know, one of New Zealand's biggest and strongest businesses?
If you go back, I originally did a BCom. I worked for Deloitte for a number of years, and then I moved to Australia with Lion, as it was then, so FMCG business. I spent about 13 years there in various roles across the commercial business, finance roles. And then I joined Spark back in 2013 as the CFO. Spent a few years in the CFO role, and then I went to run our Spark Digital business. At the time, it was our government enterprise customer business, so the IT and cloud side within that. And then in the last few years, I'd broadened that out across our customer director role, which included both consumer and our business customers prior to becoming CEO back in July last year. So I've had a range of different roles within the organisation. Yeah.
Now, during this period, which is, you know, it's extraordinary. I don't think anybody could have, had the foresight to really plan for everything that COVID-19 has meant to us, even just in the initial few days. Mm. But tell us about how in Spark that you've prepared since, you know, hearing what was happening with COVID-19, you know, I guess back in January. What does that journey look like?
So for us, we started communicating with our people really from about the end of January, when we started to see what was happening offshore, started to think about what that meant for both international travel and meetings and groups of people. Obviously, at the same time, we were thinking about how we prepare our business to be able to cope with COVID-19, depending on the different levels of which it went to. And for that, it's quite different. Unfortunately, New Zealand's had a number of natural disasters. So from a crisis business continuity planning perspective, we have a number of processes already in place. But we had to think about this one a little bit differently, because it was less about buildings being unable to be accessed or available. And it was really more about how we thought about critical teams. How did they get split? So if we had an instance, we could still operate key services that needed to continue from a particular, whether that's a data center or whether that's our 111 calling. So things like that made us think about it a little bit differently. So we spent the time through February really getting ready in terms of what were our plans and splitting our teams and making sure that we had resilience across those teams should something like that occur to us. So effectively, by the time we'd got to the alert level 3 announcement, we were already largely working in that way. We'd worked through, our teams had moved mostly remote by that time, even before we got there. So really just the last of our people moved home after that. And it was, you know, people from my team, et cetera, that were a part of that. And then we've got our essential services workers that are there, obviously, to support the critical services that do need to be able to access certain equipment and support a number of agencies and other customers who are critical through this time. So we spent so it has taken a huge part of the focus for my leadership team. We had good support from our board and our chair as well through this time. And I think having really clear, open communication is what's important. We also break it down into three priorities. First objective being the well-being of our people had to be foremost. Next is around critical infrastructure and services for New Zealand. So if we have that operating well, then we can support. And then how does that then roll out for our customers and how we manage that throughout this time? So then that makes it really easy or more, it creates less ambiguity for our people when we're really clear around these are the priorities for right now, this is what that looks like for your team and what happens on Monday. So we went to very regular communications. Our HR director, who's Heather Polglaze, has done a fantastic job of thinking through all the elements that we want to share with our people as it's happening. Because as I said, what you want to do is create as little ambiguity as possible in a time when it's really quite uncertain. And then layer that in so people can then see as each week goes by, okay, what does that mean now?
So how do you do that? Because when times are uncertain, you know, you potentially can be too transparent, I suppose, and know, share some of the things that are maybe really doing your head in a little bit. And you know, look, I don't think any business leader in New Zealand wants to be in a position where they need to, you know, lay people off and make, you know, decisions like that. But in some cases, that might well be a possibility, or it's already happened. And sometimes, I guess, that's something we might have to look at in a month or 6 weeks or 8 weeks' time. But probably unhelpful to start commenting on those things quite early on, I imagine.
I think it's a balance. I think leaders have to hold on to ambiguity. You don't help anyone by passing on ambiguity that you cannot see an answer for yet. What you can do is help frame what are the things in our control and the things that are going to impact that person, particularly when you think about a business like ours that is an essential service and therefore supporting many other businesses. The greater clarity we provide for our people about what that means around what the tasks they'll be doing, because we've had to adapt and we've had to shift. So we closed all of our retail stores, for example, and within 48 hours what was created was what we called emergency distribution centres. So people could, if you're in a business and your modem at home breaks, that's quite a critical support service that you need through that time. So we created a contactless set-up distribution centre, so you booked appointments between 10 and 2, not for normal things or people coming into the store or anything like that. It was a contactless delivery, but we were able to achieve that and set that up within a space of a few days. We got that going. And so again, it's really what I'm really proud of when I look at our team and I see the things that we've lent into is how resilient people are. And so if you do your best as leaders to make sure that you can clarify for them what it looks like, how they understand, how they'll show up, how we look after their well-being, because it's a critical element at any point in this in terms of the health and safety, but also in terms of the mental well-being, because self-isolation in itself can be challenging. We're seeing that a lot when you look around the world and some of the things that perhaps countries a little further ahead of us. What does that mean for people? So I think for us, it's been break it down into those areas, make sure that across my team, so my leadership squad, we've got different people thinking about different elements of that. We come together really regularly as a leadership team. So each morning at 8:30 and each afternoon at 4, just to top and tail the day, especially through that first week as we were seeing everyone shift home and we were really setting those new normals. So what does working look like in this environment for people? I mean, the wonderful thing for New Zealand is there has been a huge investment both in fibre networks, mobile networks over the last decade, which means that as a country, we have very good infrastructure to help support this. If we'd been here 10 years ago, I think it probably would have been a much harder shift and the ability for New Zealand to keep working would have been quite challenging, I think. So I think going back to your earlier question, I think it's around if there are conversations that have to be had around roles or other things, you also need to do that in a way that's empathetic, but is clear for people because the worst thing that can be is not knowing and thinking there's something. So for me, I always take that approach in terms of clarity, work out what I need to hold on to as a leader and what we need to help our people set up. What we've seen so far is we've been able to move people across our front line, for example. So as the retail stores closed, we've transitioned them all into contact agents at home, or the majority, for those who won't be in the distribution centres, which has helped support us at a time when there's has been high volumes as people get set up. They want to check out things around plans and other things. So what that's shown is the huge resilience of both our people, but also our infrastructure, our planning, and ability to get that to agents at home, to have, you know, the best part of 500 people working at home now, sort of 10 days into what has been quite a massive shift.
Mm. Now, if we look back on the earthquakes that we've had to deal with, you know, Canterbury, Kaikoura, you know, those themselves were obviously, you know, really disruptive on people's lives, and you know, sadly an associated death toll. But when we went through those things, it seems to me that helped build some resiliency, and it helped us maybe in a way that other countries, you know, weren't quite so prepared, because we've been through some pretty tough stuff, you know, even in recent years since the global financial crisis. What are your thoughts on, you know, on how that sort of played into to preparing us?
I think New Zealand, as two small islands a long way away from the rest of the world, is a very resilient country. I think our people do lean into making the changes that need to be made when they can see the why. So why do we need to do this? And I think the government's done a very good job, and the Prime Minister particularly, and Dr. Ashley Bloomfield, in communicating why are we doing that, or taking the steps that we have. And I think what you can see, and when you contrast it to some of the other countries, how well New Zealanders have leaned into this, both from a business, both from the community, into how we need, what is the new normal for us for the next 4 weeks. And I think that is built, I suspect that resilience is built on having seen a number of other, unfortunately, a number of other natural events in this country. That means we understand at times like this, we all need to play our part.
Yep. Now, looking at the way that that your teams are working, you've shared a little bit about that. So, how does that look, and how did you do that that transition? How many people have you got that aren't able to have their hands on the wheel, as it were, and you know, able to be serving the business directly at this time? And how many people are able to keep going and be working from home? How does that sort of play out for you, and what does it look like?
So we've got thousands of people working remotely from home right now. Of our 5,300, there's around just under 700 that are more of essential services and may need to be in at different sites, but the vast majority are actually at home. We've been able to do that with the tools that you have in place, whether it's your Microsoft Teams or whether it's other cloud-based or VC-type tools. We've seen our teams lean into that. We'd already gone on a lot of this journey, so it made it easy for us when you've got more of a digital workplace or digital tools. The shift home is easier to manage. What we've seen is obviously a number of our people having to support us. We've had to shift and adjust to things like retail stores into the contact centres or at home, getting the equipment to them and getting the things built that they've needed to be able to work well from home has taken quite a big effort over the last week, 10 days. But again, we've seen all different parts of our business lean into that. One of the things we're working on right now is a thing called Skinny Jump, which is really around how, if you think about the digital divide, it's around about 200,000 households in New Zealand based on the latest census that don't have access to the internet. One of the things that we have done as a business over the last 3 years through our Spark Foundation is support what we'd call a subsidised not-for-profit broadband option, mostly focused on families with school-aged children who haven't had access to the internet. We have broadened that out over the last, we launched it again last week, which also covers seniors, people looking for employment. And we've got a team working pretty hard and thinking, making sure we can get this out to those families that most need it right now, who need to be connected, and people in a way which is largely a contactless model. So, of course, we're making sure we've got the health and safety of both the people that will receive it, but also our own people doing that. But what we've seen is a number of our people lean in to transition from what they're working on to helping support this. And that's what I mean around the can-do attitude and the people wanting to, one of the things I would hope at the end of this is, as a community, you've seen people come together really well. So how do we hold on to that when we come out of the COVID sort of lockdown, whenever that may be? And I think those are the things that you see around how Kiwis generally show up, and I'm proud of how our people have shown up to support that, because this is an important time for us to think about breaking down some of those barriers, like digital divides, so we can include more of New Zealanders.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. It's really, really encouraging to hear. And yeah, look, I mean, I think that going through these challenging times, certainly has to be unifying, both as a country and for those within individual organisations that that manage to weather the storm and work through it together.
Yeah. I think the other thing we've seen, which we have always done as an industry, is come together at these times, and that is no different. The Telecommunications Forum brings together both the retail service providers, so ourselves, Vodafone, 2Degrees, Vocus, and also the local fibre companies like Chorus and Enable. So when you think through that, we are looking at solutions to help solve problems or areas we see congestion. We're working hard across the industry. We're engaging with our minister each week in terms of looking at the things that we can do to help support. So I think that's an also important thing, where you put aside various competitive desires or things that might be going on, to go, right, how do we show up together and how do we stay really connected? So our operations centres talk daily. When we had some congestion around the voice congestion around the time the Prime Minister announced alert level, we saw calling that we've never seen unprecedented at one time, which meant that the handoffs between each of the providers wasn't as good as we would have liked. So we've spent the last few days of last week really increasing those channels. But that's because we're working together to create a better solution overall for our customers, but for the community as a whole. And I think that's one of the things that we do well as an industry, to make sure that we can do that.
And what have the communications channels look like? Who are you, able to connect with at a government level? Because obviously, from Prime Minister and right through, there's a lot of pressure at the government side at the moment. But it's also really critical that the channels are open and that the right discussions be had. How does that look for you at the moment?
So when you look across it, there are a number of different channels. So Fraser Honoré is the chair of the Business Advisory Council to the Prime Minister, and so he's been in contact with me personally, but also a number of other businesses to help support that, to make sure that we're sharing what we're seeing, needing, and we can have a two-way dialogue on that, as has Rob Fyfe, who's also working for the Prime Minister. Minister Farfoy has been, we have a regular weekly call with him, which is really helpful in terms of anything that we need to talk about as an industry, anything he's hearing or seeing. Minister Robson did a video stream very much like this for Business New Zealand about 10 days ago, which again laid out some of the things they were thinking about around whether that was the support packages or what else was coming. So I think, from my point of view, given the pressure and the things that are happening right now for everybody to create the new normal and to think about how to guide both a country, a business, a community through this, I think they've been very open and accessible given the constraints that are there for many leaders right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. And who do you, collaborate with? Do you have, people outside of the business that you can lean in on? I mean, certainly, I know for me, there are some things that are, reasonably obvious in terms of, running a business, and other things I need to call somebody else. And what's your thinking on this, and how would you approach it to make sure I'm not just in my own bubble of thinking and not in the right place?
I think eyes up and out is always a really important thing. I don't think anybody can have all the answers to every issue. And so I've got a community of business leaders that I speak with. We obviously have our board, and our chair, who I talk to around different elements of how we're thinking about it. And it's as much around testing ideas as it is also reaching out to support, because there are different businesses going through different things right now, particularly in tourism, airports, things like that. So us as a community leaning in when it's difficult to offer that support and or anything that we can do to make sure we're doing the best that we can to support those businesses is pretty critical. And I know I've been in that situation myself already in my time in leading Spark. So that ability to just take the time to have a conversation at a time when there's a lot going on is really critical. And I think we tend to do that pretty well in New Zealand. I think that's one of the things most of the leaders I know have very much a New Zealand Inc. perspective. So they're focused on how do we lift this for all of New Zealand. And so the conversations and that you have and therefore their ability to lean into it is really guided by that. And I think that's a pretty unique thing, having worked in other countries. I'm not sure that you see it quite as much as you do in New Zealand.
No, I would agree with that. So I guess that leads to, you know, how do you balance the kind of the here and now, the things we're having to deal with right now, with starting to have those more I guess strategic conversations and be planning ahead for coming out of this and for helping as business changes, because I guess there's a there's a whole lot of thinking that needs to go on probably inside every organization around that longer term view. And for some right now they will already be in a position where their existing operations are heavily impacted and maybe longer term, so it's a matter of sort of trying to think about reinventing the business. I guess that's going to is going to vary quite broadly. I imagine for Spark, most of your business is going to be pretty sound longer term.
Yeah, so I think it is how we've broken it down into is get the immediacy in terms of getting that stable backbone set up, which is there now. Then we look ahead and say, okay, so what does this mean beyond the next 8 weeks, 90 days? What should we be doing? And what are the things that we've seen on how quickly we've been able to mobilise some of our changes that we've made? And what would that look like as if we go forward as our new normal, in terms of whether that's the way we've been able to shift really our frontline to be able to move across different parts of our channels, whether that's retail, whether that's contact centre, in a way that was pretty seamless for our teams, in terms of not saying without a lot of work, but it was seamless. So the question is, what does that look like when we go into the new phase? If we come out of, when we come out of a more lockdown, and who knows when that will be and whether that will be national or whether that will be local differences, how do we think about investment? Because we need New Zealand to be really productive to be able to recover as quickly as we can as an economy. So what do we need to be doing? What will be the critical choices we will make to invest to make sure that we can lift our performance and bring with that our customers? So some of the things we've been thinking around, obviously around 5G, some of those elements, accelerating that maybe one of those solutions in order to help businesses become more productive, because it'll enable technology to support at a time when many businesses will have been affected by this, and we're very aware of that. We work with so many customers and businesses across New Zealand, so it's a critical part of making sure we're doing our part to support them. So I think from our point of view, I think you do have to have an eye on what does the world look like in this model, and there's some things that will change probably forever out of the change that we're seeing right now. And so how do we lean into that to find those opportunities that you can really capitalize on a time when there's a lot of difficulty around.
Now, with just how broad your customer base is, from other large organizations, government entities, through to individuals with some sort of single mobile connection with you and so on, what sort of viewpoint are you getting on the things that organizations and individuals, but especially on that business front, that that people are dealing with and the challenges that they're facing right now?
I mean, for many, so if you start with businesses, especially New Zealand's made up of a lot of small and medium-sized enterprises, as you know. So one of the critical things, and I think the reason the government moved so quickly, was around the wage subsidies, sick leave subsidies, how they support so that employment can be retained for as long as possible. When I look across, and that applies to some of our larger entities too, who are dealing with quite, I mean, in New Zealand has been very open about the challenges they've faced, as we've seen international, the borders largely closed, and international travel and domestic travel pretty much halt for now. So I think it's thinking around, for those businesses, how do we make the choices or changes that have to be made to deal with the revenue issues, but at the same time think about how do they get support in place so that they can come out the other side of that. And obviously the government made the choices there about supporting through that, through the loan arrangement, to ensure that they could come through that. So I think for us it's looking at how we support our small and medium-sized customers within that, as well as our larger customers too. And some of that has been around the announcements we made early on in relation to whether that was data caps for consumers facing financial hardship, or whether that was around not disconnecting anyone, or late payment fees, all those sorts of things for this period where we had lockdown. And so we thought quite hard around what are the most important things for people to keep working who work with us and have done for a long period of time, and that's important to stay connected and that they have quality networks behind that. So we've thought quite hard about that as a business, but also as an industry, to make sure that we're supporting New Zealanders there. And I think that's what we will see more of, is how do we start to reinvent some of the models and therefore support businesses to come back online as quickly as possible, because it is challenging when you look out there.
I mean, it certainly seems as though we will be dealing with quite some heavy disruption to a lot of organisations, whether that's downsizing or whether that means that they haven't necessarily been able to survive through this period. But then on the flip side, that creates an opportunity for innovation and new businesses and new entities. And, you know, hopefully, as that happens, we go forward with an approach to, really leverage the smarts that New Zealand has from that innovation perspective, the creative talents that we have here. Have you, had a chance to give, much thought as to what that future New Zealand could look like, and the sorts of things that those who are maybe steering down the barrel a little bit, with maybe their current career or their current business, wondering what directions that they should be, the things that they should be thinking about?
Look, I think when you stand back from it, I think out of some of the very negative consequences of what COVID will obviously bring to both society from a health, but also from a economy perspective, I think the opportunity for New Zealand, I think is, you're right, is around innovation. It's also about rethinking some of the models. I talked about digital divide. For me, this looks like one of the biggest opportunities we have as a country to really close that. And when you look at that, what does that do? Well, it helps people to be able to participate in society, to learn, to contribute. So if we're looking for a more productive society when we come out of this, putting the tools in the hands of New Zealanders is a pretty critical part of that. I think when you think about some of the work that is happening around health right now to get ready for being able to deal with the challenges of COVID, some of the step forward, I think the question is, when we look at healthcare models going forward, are there going to be new things or models that are born out of this time that make will enable New Zealand to again be able to get better health outcomes for the community, but also improve the both productivity and the cost opportunities within that to better support that network. And I think when you stand back as well, I think what we'll see is there is an opportunity for new models to emerge overall in terms of innovation, whether that's thinking around the changes in what we're seeing in consumer behaviour. Now, we're very early days into our lockdown, but if you look forward in 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, if we were there, what would that look like, and how would you start to think about serving in the home more, creating more of those services? I think that's an opportunity I think we'll see with things like online shop, all those sort of things. I think there have been a number of changes in history over time which have been driven out of quite a big catalyst like this. So I think for us, it's really thinking about what are the things that are going to be important to keep New Zealand working, learning, and living well. And I think there's some of the things around, and it has to have investment at the heart of it, because I think without investment, the ability to create some of these new models quickly may get slowed down by either restrictions, legislation, all those sort of things. So I think what we have to do is garner our best minds in the country to think about how we might come out of this.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you know, Spark has been, you know, rethinking, I guess, you know, your business over, you know, over a number of years, and you know, there have been a whole range of changes, you know, in the last sort of five or 10 years. Spark Ventures has been part of that, where you know, there's been that approach to think about, well, what is the future of our business or your business look like? And can you walk us through a little bit of that, and you know, what, sure, how you think that sort of all the things that has taught you?
Yeah, I think if you think about a business, and I mean, I've been in it 7 years now, but when I think back to what it was then, we're predominantly a telecommunications infrastructure company where voice revenues were by far the largest share. So I'm talking about picking up the old landline phone. Now, when you look at it, it's a significantly smaller part of our business, and what we've been able to migrate to is new forms of business, whether that's cloud and IT, whether that's what we can do on the mobile networks. And as you look forward and you look at the technology that's coming, what it allows us to do is rethink both our industry, but what we can deliver for our customers and the community around new technology to enable that. So that's what we've been passionate about, 5G, for example. That's been one of those. The type work we did in Ventures really helped us to get a new way of working and start to think about different models, how we think about you know, some of the things like design thinking started there. Working in Agile in some ways, we started there, but obviously we went on a larger scale with our organisation almost 18, 19 months ago now, in terms of, and I think that set us up well too for how we work into the future. So when we had to make this change around most people, well, the majority of our folks moving home to work, we've already got a group of people who are used to change. And a lot of what you hear about, whether it's ventures or moving into new businesses or transitioning your business through, it's a lot about the mindset to be able to go, okay, if you think about a growth mindset, it's how might I, what's the problem I'm trying to solve, and get really specific about what you're trying to solve for your customers. If you get too caught up in all the barriers and why you can't happen, one, it kills the innovation idea, but secondly, you probably don't have as many people leaning into it. So for us, a lot of it's been focused on how do we get the right mindsets in our organization? How do we break down some of the hierarchies that we used to have, whether that be business unit, whether that be you know, everyone has the different silos within their organization. Our shift towards Agile was really more around coming behind a purpose of, and if you look at our purpose, it's to help all of New Zealand win big in a digital world. So then what are we doing within that to support that purpose, and how does that break down when you remove the hierarchies that sit behind it? And a lot of it was about empowering our people with very clear parameters around what we wanted to do. And so the shift we've seen has enabled us, I think, to be better prepared as we've moved into a world of with COVID and the changes that's required in our business, but also for our teams. And I think for a lot of organisations, thinking around as they come out of this time is, what is the right model that we will need to operate to be able to adapt at the pace that we need to? And what are the things that will get left behind? I think whenever you think about moving house, you know, you think about three trucks. Sort of one truck goes to the sort of rubbish tip with all the things that you probably should have thrown away a long time but haven't got around to it. Another truck goes to the new house, and then you probably have a third truck that comes with some new things that you didn't have before. So how are you thinking about your organisation and reimagining it? And unfortunately for many people, some of the challenges of COVID will mean there is no choice but to do that. But the question is then, how do you set yourself up both to work in a different way, but to be clear about the things that the customers you're looking to serve most need, and how you fill that need. And I think for New Zealand, it is much more about creating that connection or an ecosystem across businesses than it is about one business owning it all, or one, or you owning one section. I think we see that much more in our world as we look ahead. It's a lot about partnerships. It's a lot about working across and work out what you're really good at. But the things that you're not so good at, give it to someone else who is. And, you know, part of our strategy over time with the transformation we've been on through ventures and other things is around, what are the businesses that we're the best owner of and what are we not? And exit those ones, some of the offshore businesses, some of the other businesses that weren't clearly on strategy for us. Because at the end of the day, it's about how you allocate scarce resources, your people, and you do it behind something that they love. And I think having a real clear purpose for your people as you go, as you lean into times like this, makes it really hard for people to, makes it easy for people to go, why do I show up each day? And how does my contribution actually add to that broader purpose? So things like when I talk about Skinny Jump, that's really, for a lot of our people, very passionate about that because it is helping solve a problem for New Zealand and something that is really in our space and we should be able to support.
Yeah, that's so great. A long answer. No, that's really interesting. Now, I guess getting down to, you know, practicalities of day to day, you know, how is it for you, working from home and not being able to, interact with people in the normal sort of, you know, face to face.
So you sort of miss the water cooler conversation, so to speak. But then we found we use a lot of Microsoft Teams, so found that very easy to just hook up video call with one or many of my team at a different time. So it's been different. What I have noticed is spending more time in front of screens because you don't have the natural things where you're either traveling or you're speaking at things or you're meeting with people. So you have to be careful to make sure you actually build in some time so you step away from the screen. I mean, I know with my routine now, pretty much first thing in the morning, I'm up out walking within my local community, just to clarify that. But I find that clears the head and it gives me a chance to just think about the day ahead and fill up. I'm a big believer that resilience is built from making sure you have breaks. When you're on, but then you have a chance to step away. We've also, in our household, we've got two teenagers. So we've had some, as I said, some of them are in schooling right now, digital learning, as we speak. Someone is on holiday. And then working out what that looks like for our family as well, because you're suddenly shifting the dynamics for everyone in terms of how we separate out into the house and what that and how we work and live together.
Yeah, and what's the feedback that you're getting across your team with dealing, you know, because all of your people will be dealing with with similar types of challenges. Some of them may not have the as much space as others. Some will be in locations where I imagine their broadband access is varied. So if someone's doing some digital learning in another room and somebody else is trying to do a video call, maybe things happening in the same room, right? Those things aren't going to be sort of the same for everyone.
No, that's right. And we were very reflectful when last week or the week before that, just talking to people about how do you set up your new normal at home. So right now your focus for the next few days is getting that set up, working out how you all come together and how you find that space for you, rather than going, right, you need to be on working right now, when really we know it's a seismic shift for many people in terms of that shift home. So we tried to make sure that we balanced it. Lots of communication about some tips and tricks about working at home. We've got Yammer and things, tools like that across our teams as well, so they can share things they're seeing, things they need to know, ideas. So we're trying to make it very much open communication about how people best get up for success, accepting. And there's also a reality for some people that particularly as we go into the school holidays, there's not that same ability for them to be able to work from home if they've got smaller children. So how do we help support them through that time? It's not forever. And as an organisation, we need to make sure we lean into those things. So that's what we spent time as a leadership team thinking about and sharing with our people.
And how do you think work patterns will change going forward from this time? Because there are lots of people that have never worked from home before.
Yeah.
Now they're working from home. And there are some aspects of that they'll quite like. There might be other aspects that they don't like, or maybe that don't work quite the same way for the business. What's your view on how we're going to land? Will we need as much inner city real estate, when we look forward five or 10 years?
Look, I think it's a really interesting opportunity to do something like this at scale. Has meant that it has forced people to rethink some of their either belief sets or how easier it is or isn't to work from home. And I think we'll see a mixture of what I'd hope is that working from home will become more accessible and people, but I think there's still a human connection that people will look for as well. So I think it's probably a more mixed model you'll see. But what that leads to, that same question is around, well, do you need as bigger offices, city locations, all those things that go with it, or can you start to think about how you might use that more flexibly, much the way you see with car parking and things these days, whether it's your parkables or things like that that are sharing space that isn't used all the time. I think that's one of the things, again, when we start reimagining what the world might look like post this time, how are we thinking about flexibility in its broader sense for our people? At the same time, being clear about what great looks like when you are working from home. So it isn't, it is working from home, but it's really focused on the outcomes, my view. So if you get the right outcomes and you can achieve that as a team and you've got that connection so that people aren't isolated, then I think there's some of the things that are quite key ingredients to make sure that you can deliver the productivity that you need through that time.
Yeah, it certainly makes me wonder whether we will have, much more broadly distributed workforces in the future. And we certainly have seen it in recent years, but I guess more with those, newer, very tech-oriented firms where you've got a workforce that might be scattered around the globe or scattered around the country and they maybe meet in person, once a year and so on. Mm. Whereas that probably hasn't been our normal thinking about how we operate businesses here, has it?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And while the tools have been there, certainly in the last few years, I still think it's totally a mindset thing. So how do businesses think about it in the right way too? Because as we talked about, it can also be quite isolating. So what's the balance that we get within that and how do you make that work? But I think it does open up the mind to how more flexible could we be and what better outcome could we achieve. I also think it makes you think, so our example of being able to move people through our front lines, for example, into different shows you that actually having a more diverse set of skills that enables you to do this in 1 week or this in 1 day also increases your employability as well and your ability to try different things and to keep it interesting, broader career paths for people. So I think that's some of the thinking that will come out of this time as well as new models. And I think we might need to make sure that we don't lose that when we do come out, that we actually take the time to think about, okay, what should be different and why? And then, as I said, there'll always be some barriers and people will have some views or points of view about why not. But I think we've got to really ask ourselves quite closely, like, is it just because of our mindset, because that wasn't how we did it in the past, or is it because there is a real barrier that has to be addressed?
I think that's good. And look, I hope here on the podcast we'll be able to delve a bit more in future discussions around some of the things that we need to consider and maybe there are mindset a range of mindset changes and things that we need to be able to take on as we look forward to, conquer things in the future as we move ahead as a nation and as an economy. Are there any remaining things you'd like to share as we come towards the end?
Well, look, I think for us and for me personally, I'm passionate Kiwi. We're really passionate about New Zealand doing well. If you think about our purpose and what we're here for in terms of helping New Zealand win big in a digital world, this is no more brought to bear than at this time when we all need to be connecting in that way. So we'll be leaning in. We have already, we've talked about some of the things that are really important to us in terms of both digital divide, but also more importantly, how we help businesses come through this time. So we have got our ears open and we are very happy to engage with anyone who does need some support through this time. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And we look forward to coming through this as best as we can and creating a recovery within New Zealand as quickly as we can.
Well, thank you, Jolly Hodson. It's look, it's a real privilege to have you on the show, and you know, thank you for taking some time out to join us. And look, all the best for Spark. And look, we appreciate the work that you're doing to keep New Zealand connected and operational through this time. I think it's pretty important.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks for having us on the show today.
Well, thank you very much for listening into this episode of the New Zealand Business Podcast. There's lots more episodes if you haven't heard them already. Interviews with the likes of Rod Drury from Xero, Peter Beck, founder at Rocket Lab. We've got Sir Stephen Tindall. There's Chris Quinn there from Foodstuffs, Sir Michael Hill, Annette Presley, and a whole lot more. So hope you'll check out those episodes. And of course, we have a bunch of other fantastic podcasts also across at www.podcasts.nz, including This Climate Business, a new show from award-winning entrepreneur and journalist Vincent Heringer. We have the NZ Everyday Investor. We also have the New Zealand Tech Podcast that I host, the New Zealand Wine Podcast, and the Electric Vehicle Podcast that you can find out over there. So thanks, everybody. This is Paul Spain signing out, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the New Zealand Business Podcast. And if your organisation needs help with technology services during this challenging time, then get in touch with my firm and show sponsor, Gorilla Technology.
The New Zealand Business Podcast, brought to you by Gorilla Technology, your strategic and proactive IT partner.